guys, welcome to the Twiniversity Podcast, a show created exclusively for parents of twins. I'm your host, Natalie Diaz. I am a mom of twins. I am also the Twiniversity founder, and I am the best-selling author of the book, What to Do When You're Having Two. Our goal at Twiniversity is to make sure that you always feel connected, we laugh at the little things, and we really do get to teach you a few tricks along the way. And that is what we hope this podcast is about to do. So welcome to Twiniversity. And welcome back to another fantastic episode of our Twiniversity podcast. I feel like if I don't say that now, I feel like it's becoming a tradition for our podcast that I always say, welcome to our fantastic episode. So this is a great one. I'm super stoked about this because this is something that was a big part of my life too. And today we are talking to Melissa Titus, who is a mama of 2.5-year-old boy-girl twinnies. And Melissa is a very interesting mama because while a lot of us know that there's things that we have to do before our kids go to kindergarten, Melissa's like, listen to me now and believe me later. This is how we're going to do preschool at home. And this is going to be the process. It's going to be sanity for your twins and for you. And she's come up with unbelievable strategies that she's willing to share with us today. So today we are talking about home preschool, not homeschooling. We don't know what's going to happen after this. One step at a time, guys. One step at a time. Welcome, Melissa.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Oh my God, I'm so glad that you're here. Genuinely, this is a very, very big topic. And so you were saying that, you know, options are very limited, right, when it comes to preschool.
Yes.
And
especially if you have twins.
Yeah. And they're limited geographically as well as financially. Right. As well as just maybe you and your partner have two very opposing work schedules and you can't get kids there or whatever. So tell us about like how you came to say, okay, this has to be official.
Well, for us, it was just a financial thing as well as having been a former teacher. I thought, okay, this is something that I can do at home. Mm-hmm. I don't need to pay a car payment per kid per month to do this when I'm a former teacher. I can look up resources. Kids learn best through play. Mm-hmm. That's how they learn, especially at such a young age. And Absolutely. So a lot of it is just being very intentional about what I do with them and taking moments during our day and making them these teachable moments.
Mm-hmm. So when you were a teacher, did you take a pause for the 20s? Is this a permanent pause for the 20s? What's happening here?
Yes, I'm taking a pause. I may go back. I'm not really sure what's next. Teaching has definitely changed a lot, especially in the past 10 years. I did it for 10 years. I taught kindergarten and second grade, and it has changed a lot in the past 10 years. And I feel like there's so much pressure on kids entering kindergarten to know all these things. And I think we kind of need to start taking some of that pressure off and realizing that, you know, all kids are excited to go to school and they're going to be ready for school.
Well,
and they will be ready.
They will be ready, but you know, not everybody is a very hands-on parent or doesn't realize that maybe they should be. And while we do, your kids will need to know some things going into school. Right. They don't need to know, you know, the Gettysburg Address. That's not necessary.
Right.
Or to speak Mandarin at 4. But they're sure. The schools are going to have some expectations of things that your kids should learn. So when you had your 20s with your background in education, did you know exactly what they needed to know to have their best foot forward when they got to kindergarten?
Right. Yes, definitely. The main thing that I always told parents as a teacher to focus on and that I want to focus on with my kids is social skills, making sure that they know how to wait their turn, that they know how to take turns, that they know how to get along with other children, that they know how to make friends, that they know how to say please and thank you. Those kind of things are going to carry them further. Yes. There are academic skills that they need to know. They need to know concepts of print, which is like being able to turn the pages of a book and knowing that books are for reading. Those kind of things, counting, the basics that I think a lot of parents know and want to focus on. But I think we often forget those social skills that they need. Mm-hmm. And that was something I saw as a teacher that I want to make sure as a parent I focus on, making sure that they know how to actually be in school and be a good citizen, and that they can wait their turn, and that they can be helpful to their teacher. Those are things that will carry them so much further than the academic stuff. And the academic stuff, it will come. I know that it's very stressful as a parent, because right now mine are 2.5 and I'm still just like, well, I have to make sure that they know this, 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 and this, especially being a teacher, you know? Yeah. But then it's like, well, actually, they will be fine. I've seen my students come in, not know some of the academics, but have the social skills.
Yeah.
And they're fine, and they will learn it.
Oh, Melissa, I'm telling you, you're preaching to the choir here, girl. Let me tell you something. As I, you know, when my twins were born, they were born early, and then they needed a lot of therapy for many, many years. And especially for my twinnies, I really did feel like, even though I have no background in education, that there had to be some kind of formality in our house, some kind of structure. Because, you know, when they're tiny, right, you have your feeding schedule, then you add your sleep schedule, and then you're like, okay, now what? And there is a now what? And people think like, that's it. Oh, there's nothing. It's a free for all till the kids go to school. Mm-hmm. So when you knew that you wanted to start implementing kind of a home preschool, where did you start?
I just started from those skills that I knew they needed to know and made it part of our daily routine.
Okay.
As far as, like, for example, at breakfast, instead of just, okay, we're going to eat our breakfast, well, can we count the food that we're eating? Can you count your blueberries on your plate? Mm-hmm. What color are those blueberries? And really just being more intentional about asking them questions about what they're eating or what they're doing, and then incorporating those things into our day. And then I also started some programs like MOPS, and I'm part of a Moms of Multiples group.
Okay.
And we do play dates, so they get some of the socialization in there. And they're learning things through that. And it just kind of started from there. And I've just kind of built on it as they've gotten older and more capable of working on some of those things. And maybe just trying 2 or 3 different activities a week. I mean, you don't have to have this formal, like, 3-hour school time with them every day. That's not even appropriate for children in preschool. That's not really something that they're going to be able to do, most of them. But you can start out small and say, okay, what are 2 or 3 activities this week that I can do to work on colors, to work on numbers, to work on shapes, those kind of things.
And where did you get those resources? Like, where did you get those resources?
I really like Teachers Pay Teachers. Okay. It's not just for teachers. You can go on and just register with an email, and you can search for those resources, and they'll give you games and activities. Some of them were things that I had done myself as a teacher, and I kind of modified them for their age. Some of them are, I really like a website called Hands On As We Grow.
Okay.
And they are so good. And they're always posting great activities and ideas for preschoolers.
And so that's Pay As We Grow? Say it again.
Hands On. Hands, like your hands. On. Hands-on as we grow.
Hands-on as we grow. Okay, I'm making a list, too, for all of us, and then we'll make sure that we include all the links. The Teachers Pay Teachers I've even been on. So I got linked to something. I was like, oh, this is a good idea. I don't remember what it was, but it was something that it was for my kids' age, for, you know, eighth grades. They have stuff on that, which I thought was fantastic.
For all ages.
Yeah, for science projects, and it was just ideas. Oh, my gosh. Melissa, I had no idea. I loved it. And I love that, you know, as a teacher, I'm sure you love it too, because you're spending so much money out of your own pocket buying school supplies
or
and
time.
Art supplies. Yeah. So the thing is, if you could have a little supplemental income for sheets that you made, I thought that was great. So yeah, it's Teachers Pay Teachers is not only fantastic because the content's going to be great, but it's really going to a good cause, which is a teacher. I love
it. Yeah, it's all teachers creating all this stuff. And some of them are just so amazing. I would love to be able to have time to do all that, and I haven't yet, but the resources available are so amazing. Just if you're working on letters, for example, if you're working on teaching their name,
yes.
That's one of the first things that I like to do to introduce the alphabet is teach mm-hmm. them their name, because that's so engaging for them. They love learning their name. And so you can go on Teachers Pay Teachers, type in name activities, and you're going to get so mm-hmm. many, and you can search for free and choose two or three of those and work on those a week. And that's really all you have to do. You don't have to have a daily set mm-hmm. school time where you're really, because I've tried similar things like that, having maybe like a circle time every day, and they just were not having it. My twins were just kind of like, okay, we're 2.5. We really are not into this. Like, maybe that was more something when I was teaching kindergarten to 5-year-olds, they were able to handle. So I had to kind of go back and reevaluate and say, okay, this is not mm-hmm. developmentally appropriate for them right now. I need to figure out something else. So I just started making it more play-based mm-hmm. because that's what toddlers and preschoolers love to do. They love to play. And if you can get those play-based activities going mm-hmm. and just do even a few a week, even if you're a working parent, you can do those at night or at breakfast or at dinner. Those are things that can really help give them that extra push that they need and extra preparation for mm-hmm. when they get to school. They'll be more ready and more confident.
Now, let's talk about some of the items that you have in your house, right? So we talked about the importance of play and structure, but not structure. What, when you give your kids free time in their house and they're just being kids and just running around, what are some of the items that are in front of them? Like, as a teacher, what was important to have in the house for you that you knew that this was going to be an item that had benefit?
Right. Well, we have a kitchen station. Kitchen area that's okay. important for kids. They're learning so many different things from that. They're learning the names of foods. They're learning how to share and take turns and mm-hmm. maybe to serve someone else. So a play-based social center like that is important to have.
Okay.
You can do a post office. You can do a restaurant, whatever you want to set up in your home, and give them opportunities to use their imagination and to really create their own things. And then I also wanted to have a lot of open-ended things like building blocks and magnet tiles, things like that that are not electronic-based.
Okay.
You kind of want to steer away from that. They're not necessarily bad, but you really want to have things that are open-ended where a child can practice social skills, mm-hmm. but also practice creativity. And just opportunities to create art. So I'll go to dollar stores. We have some great dollar stores here in Texas. And so I'll go out mm-hmm. and I'll get a bunch of art supplies. And it's so cheap and it's so affordable. And you can just go and buy different things for them to be able to create and kind of let them use their imagination. Sometimes you want it to be more structured
mm-hmm.
and you can say, okay, like for Easter, we're making an Easter bunny and here's how to put it together. But then other times just let them create, just let them draw, just let them experiment using paints and sensory materials to kind of give them that opportunity to explore and yeah. use their imagination. And because that's the best way they learn, through play.
Melissa, you know what's something that I just learned this week, actually, here in our fine little city in New York? I found out that there are quite a few senior organizations that will accept children's artwork, like Meals on Wheels and stuff like that. And so when they yeah. deliver meals to seniors, they put a little art project in there. So for, and I know as twin parents, we're so yeah. totally overrun with the art project.
Yeah,
so if you're somebody who's like, I can't throw this out because it's, you know, despite the fact that it's a handprint,
yeah.
that there
exactly.
are plenty, there's plenty of organizations that will happily take any children's art, because while, you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure, as they say. And
sure,
it's,
yeah.
there's always something to do. So there's always something to do with old art stuff. So if you're going mm-hmm. to create that, don't ever waste that. For us, what we used to do is we used to do art supplies and like we used to do art time. And then I would use those as my Christmas cards. So they would do a piece of paper. I would just always use the same piece of paper, and you could go to Staples and you could get a greeting card envelope, which fits in 8.5 by 11 paper folded. And then I would just take Sharpie and write Merry Christmas and whatever. And it would be handprints or whatever. But I hated throwing out art supplies. But you
need... And I bet they loved that too.
Oh, God. They loved it. And they knew that I was sending them out to people. And then people would get them. And then we'd see our family for Christmas. And they'd be so happy. But you could do it for any time. You could just use it as, you know, have a pen pal to send it to grandma. So
right. And those are such good skills for them to develop. You know, community service for elderly or for grandma and grandpa, making them cards. I mean, my son is always make card for papa, make card for papa. He loves to do that. And it just helps with that social skills development, helping them to learn to be a good citizen and a good person. Mm-hmm. And that's so important. I think it's something that we kind of forget to focus on because we want to drive home these academic skills.
Yes.
We have all these tests that they have to take and they do have to learn those skills. And it's just, it's so much pressure, but I think we also have to make sure we're focusing on the how to be a good person skills too. And that's going to take them far in life, no matter what they go through. And they can start learning those at a young age.
Absolutely.
Like you said, making a simple card.
Yes. Yes. It's interesting, excuse me, because in Twiniversity classes, you know, we do a whole Twiniversity class, blah, blah, blah. We talk about gear, blah. But at the end, I always say, raise your hand if you're raising your children to live in your basement. Who here is raising their children to just live permanently in their basement and be a full-time video game player? So, right? So everybody's like, oh, that's crazy. Yeah. But, you know, we're teaching them how to be good humans. And so there's so many things that parents are not thinking about. And so, you know, guys, I know that you're listening and you're like, but Melissa has, you know, an education background. Guys, you don't need to have an education background to teach your kids how to be good humans and how to take turns and be respectful and empathetic and compassionate. These are things that are taught in preschool. And there's all these like funny joke books about like the most important things I've learned in life were in kindergarten and stuff like that. But it's really true.
So true.
Yeah.
Yes.
It really, really is. And so if you're like, well, there's nothing that I'm teaching my kids. Hey, I want to just gently remind everybody listening, you're teaching your kids right now. Whether you're teaching your kids by listening to this in the car and saying, hey, listen, we're not going to listen to Kids Bop one more time because mommy's going to go into a murderous rage. Or, you know, you're hiding in the bathroom in Starbucks listening to this and you're like, I'm teaching my kids that everybody needs a minute. Everybody needs a minute to decompress. So you're constantly teaching your kids.
Realize how much they're teaching their kids as they're going through their day. Oh, well, if you let your kid order at a restaurant and practice doing that, if you let them say please and thank you to a cashier, you know, go through the cashier instead of self-checkout. I'm not a big fan of self-checkout. I really like to take my kids through to meet and talk to an actual person. That's something that I really like to focus on. And when you're doing those things, they're learning so much. If you take them to the zoo and you might think this is the 500th time I've taken them to the zoo. I don't want to spend more money on anything else. We have a membership, whatever it may be. And you're just kind of feeling like defeated as a parent. Don't feel that way because that's not true. Every time you take them for any kind of experience, even if it's just to the park or the playground, free things are teaching them. They're helping them grow as a person. They're helping them learn to count. They're helping them learn concepts about reading. If they see the McDonald's arch and they tell you, mommy, look, McDonald's, they are reading, they are learning, and you are teaching them things. And if you can just be a little more intentional even about when you're doing that, just saying, oh, okay, well, what is a question I could ask them about? Can I ask them if they see other restaurants in the area and just kind of expand on it just a little bit, and you'll see so much growth just in doing that.
Yeah. And car color too. Like the kids could shout out car colors and, you know, that's another big one because playing the license plate game, that's obviously for a much later date. But if the kids get used to being engaged in the car while you're driving in a safe manner, they're not going to be so quick to grab their iPad if they get used to having a conversation with each other. So yeah. It's, you know, and also preschool isn't just at home, right? So Melissa's telling us, like, here's what we do at home. But if you guys are listening, what she's really saying is that it's a 24-hour a day kind of job, right? So everybody's eyes are always on us. And learning is not something that just happens in an actual building called school. Your kids are learning from, eyes open to eyes shut. And so card games, another great thing that we would do at restaurants besides the ordering, which I thought was fantastic, is that, you know, when you sit down at a restaurant, there would be all the packets of sugar. And mm-hmm. so now there's like a multitude of colors. When the twinnies were little, we would make Candyland out of the sugar packets table. Because when you're waiting for your food, you have to do something, and I don't want to be like, here's something, play with this. So you could make an entire board game on your table out of sugar packets. And, you know, the yellow is you skip a space. The pink is you lose a turn.
Yeah,
and
make it up.
Yeah. You could totally make it up, and you don't need a die. You could literally just take turns. You could, if they have a placemat, you could rip it up and write little numbers on it, and that's how you choose the, you know, how many spaces it's going to go. But just if you're creative, your twins will grow up being creative. If they always have to find a game, and I honestly, Melissa, too, I think that this is definitely like a twin mom thing, because if it was a singleton, I would just be able to engage with you and not have to worry about anybody around us. But if you're a mom,
you have to get creative.
You have to. And it has to be inclusive. So you have to come up with things that everybody is going to enjoy. So that was one of my favorites. And my kids still to this day will tell you about Candyland. Our fake. We never had, by the way, we never actually had Candyland. We never owned Candyland. I don't know why. Yes.
That's so great.
It was Sugarland, which the band then took the name, and that was that. So we can't play that anymore. But it's just have some great stuff in your home and have some art supplies, and don't be close-minded about this, and don't be rigid, and don't be structured. Now, Melissa, if you have parents, like, sometimes parents can't grasp this idea. They're just like, no, school has to be you sit down and you do something. How do we help people get out of the mindset that it's a 24-hour thing instead of a structured activity?
I think you just have to look at how your kids are growing and kind of compare that. Maybe take some notes. If that really helps you and you're a very type A person, take some sort of observational notes. Just kind of watch how they're playing with something one day. And I kind of do that automatically as a teacher mm-hmm. because it was just something that I was constantly having to do with my students. So for example, when I first put a piece of paper in front of my kids to have them color, mm-hmm. I watched, do they make circles? Do they make lines? What do they do? Well, at first it was just kind of barely even touching the paper kind of a thing. Well, compare that to today, you know, watching them draw, they can make circles mm-hmm. and they're making lines. And those are called letter-like forms. And that means that they're getting ready to make letters. And so you kind of have to look at it that way and maybe take some notes or maybe go online and find a checklist. If you mm-hmm. need a checklist so that helps you, like we talked about, teachers pay teachers. You can go on there, search kindergarten readiness checklist or preschool skills checklist and search for those things and kind of just look and take a couple things from that and say, okay, this is something that I can look at to mm-hmm. see if my child really is progressing in those skills. And if they don't have all of those skills by kindergarten, don't stress yourself out.
Yeah.
But it does give you kind of a guide. It does give you kind of a template to look at to say, okay, here are the things that they're going to need to know.
Yeah.
And then incorporate those things in a playful way. Let them learn them in a way that's play-based.
Mm-hmm. There's, you know, a great company, and I have actually the catalog literally on my desk right now, which is pretty funny. So it's called School Zone, and I just met with them at Toy Fair. And so School Zone is a company that's based in Michigan. I think it's Michigan. Don't quote me on that. But they are, they have like workbooks and stuff, and you could find them at Walgreens and at Walmart and, you know, Rite Aid and CVS and stuff. So if you're somebody who's like, I need more structure from my type A. You could buy those things, but don't, you know, you could use them as a tool for the kids, but use them as inspiration for you.
Right, right. I say use them as a tool. If that helps you, and, yes, and if your child is one of those kids who loves doing that, my daughter, she's probably going to be one of those kids who loves sitting and tracing the letters and writing her name. She loves for me to sit and do those things with her. My son is more like, okay, I want to get up and play, mom, and that's fine. He's more into the gross motor skill development type stuff. And so we have to do more games and activities where he can move, and that's okay. But if you do have a kid who likes those kind of things, go for it, you know, and if that helps you to feel better and more confident as a parent, go for it.
Now, with bringing that up about having kids that have like diverse kind of likes, typically what I would say is that, you know, always kind of lean towards that. But I think that in the early stages, you really try to balance it. So I think that for us, and then you have to tell me this too, as an educator, I think that in the beginning, it's going to be more beneficial to balance the gross and fine motor than it would be later on. Because if you keep allowing one child to do nothing but what they like, they're going to paint themselves into a corner.
That's true.
So you got to shake it up.
You really do have to shake it up and say, okay, well, you know, let's practice this for a few minutes. And at 2.5, neither of them is going to want to. Some days they will, some days they won't. You just kind of have to kind of go with the flow with that. But as they get older and as they get closer and closer to kindergarten, you can say, hey, let's practice these letters for a few minutes and then we'll go outside and play. So kind of have some sort of incentive. It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't want it to be candy or things like that, but you just kind of want it to be more, because they'll go to school expecting candy every time they write their letters. You know, you don't want those kind of things. But maybe just reinforce it with, hey, I know you really love to go play outside. Right now, let's practice writing your name. You have such a cool name. And just really encourage them. Oh, look, you wrote the L in your name. Your name is Liam, and you wrote the L, and you wrote a capital L, and it looks so great. Wow, you're good at this. And just really giving them that encouragement and reinforcement so that they will want to do it, and so that when they get to kindergarten and the teacher says it's not time to play outside right now, we have to sit in a desk, and that is an expectation. A lot of kindergartners are getting to where they get to go to schools where they can play, but there's also a lot of expectation to be able to sit and listen to a story, to be able to sit and do some type of work, even if it's building something or an art project. They can't just get up in the middle and say, I'm done, I'm going outside to play. They kind of have to learn that structure.
And with the structure too, we had, I had a principal as a student, and I don't know why, but like at the end of class, he was expecting his 20s. And I was like, Hey, listen, before you go, tell me a few things that people should do before their kids go to school. And so now, of course, he's an educator, but he's also an administrator. So to him, he had like a different, like, you know, a whole different mindset than any teachers that I typically work with. And his thing is I'm not going to give you a bunch of them. I'm going to give you one. And I'm like, oh, tell me, what's the one thing? He said, people have to time their children's meals. The biggest problem that they had is when kids go to kindergarten and snack time is snack time. They don't want to eat in the structured snack time. And they're getting snack time because they need the energy for the next portion of the day. They're not getting snack time because, you know, grandma wants a snuggle and you're going to get a snack. And same thing with lunchtime. He says people pack such complicated lunches for their kids in bento boxes and a separate fork. And, you know, there's a straw that won't pop up.
They need so well. They really do. They're really just trying.
That's it. So he was saying that's going to be the number one thing that I would tell parents is for the entire summer leading up to the entrance into kindergarten to make your children eat out of whatever vessels they're going to eat out of for the school year in a timed fashion at a table.
Practice. And he's like, definitely practice.
He said, my teachers spend more time opening up containers. And they can't even eat their own lunch. And the whole thing is they're supposed to eat together. So I thought, Melissa, when he said that, I was like, really? Like, that's your tip? But then it really made total sense.
It So important. Well, and you know, if you think about it, children, they need the food for fuel. And so if they're barely getting to eat anything, then how are they going to perform? And we would often have to teach math like at the end of the day. And it's often a very hard subject, especially in kindergarten with all the new expectations they have on these kids. It's kind of like, okay, well, if you didn't eat at lunch and you had half a Pop-Tart or something and that was all you got in your mouth, or your mom packed this big bento box and you couldn't choose what you wanted to eat, much less have time to eat it, then you're just setting yourself up for coming into math class with, you're going hungry. To be lethargic, tired, hungry, and you're hungry. So your teacher's having to get out her stash of goldfish, her extra snacks, having to, here you go, you know, and the kid is just kind of like, okay, I have to eat these goldfish and I have to try to do my math. It's just, and it's a mess for the teacher too. I think that's such a great idea, making sure that they understand you only have a certain amount of time to eat and having structure in your day at home. Even though I stay at home with my twins and we're kind of a little more flexible about the activities, we have a set routine each day. This is the time we eat breakfast, and this is about the time we clean up our breakfast, and we have a set lunch time, and we have a nap time, even though we don't always get the naps in, but we do have a set time of we're going to at least lay down and rest. So they kind of get structure in their day so they can understand that, like you said, it's not just when grandma brings you the cookies and you can sit there and eat them on her lap kind of a thing. You kind of have to have a structure to it. I think that's so great because it is so different from what they're used to.
It's, and if you get them used to it, then there will be nothing for them to get used to. Like that's what we, you know, you, it's easy. If you do something as a habit from the beginning, it's just habit. That's just the way you do things. It's really, you know, it's not only structured activities and like you were saying, the play, but I think it's important that families know too, that chores are beneficial to the kids. And you know, one of the things that I hate the most is matching freaking socks. And I think that my hatred started way long ago. But when the twins were young, to have them do it as a matching game, oh my gosh, that was the best. Nobody wants to match socks anymore. They're too big. But like, how could we incorporate learning into, you know, helping our community, our home, right? The point, helping our parent who's ever home. But what are some kind of chore activities that are also learning based?
Right. Well, you know, you have to think about their age and what's appropriate. But I know for us, my daughter, she helps out with getting the food for the dog and knowing how much to put in. And that's a math skill that she can learn. And knowing to clean up their toys, you can count as you're cleaning. One of the things that my twins love to do, I'll get a big, I have a couple of big baskets and containers that we keep a lot of their toys in so that they can help clean up. Because if you get too structured and okay, everything has to go in this specific box, it kind of gets hard for them to help you. But if you just kind of throw everything in this big basket, for the most part, they're able to help. And so I'll say, okay, who can get 5 toys in the container? Let's see who can do that. And so I'll say, okay, ready, go. And they go and they put the toys in the container and they're both competing against each other. And we count as they do it. And they just love doing games like that. Just make it a game, especially, you know, twins love to compete against each other and see, oh, I can do it better than my brother, or I can do it better than my sister. They love that kind of stuff. So set them up like that and make it into a game. Make their chores into play. Make their chores into a game and not really calling it chores or having a chore chart. I think that can be good maybe for older kids, but when they're younger, it really has to be something fun, or they're just going to look at you and not really do anything. You know, my son, I have to make it fun for him, or he's just going to sit there and look at me like, why can't I watch Mickey Mouse or whatever he wants to do? And so you kind of have to make it something that's fun and incorporate counting or colors. Or, you know, like you said, with the Candyland game, you know, making up your own games, toss it into the basket, or those kind of things that really help them get engaged with the chores.
The wooden game tossing, I got it dangerous a few times in our house.
Yeah.
That's it. So yeah. it definitely.
You gotta be careful on what it is.
It was a projectile game more than anything called Let's Get My Sister's Eye Out of Her Head. I felt like we were playing that. This was, you know, Melissa, honestly, this was insanely beneficial. And I'm going to reiterate a few things that you said. And then, because I kind of want to like sum it up. So if everybody's like, there's so much to digest right now, I don't know what to do. So here is what I'm going to say the big takeaways are. And if there's any that I'm missing, you add them in. Okay.
Sure.
So number one, learning isn't something that only happens in a structured place at home. Learning happens everywhere. From the minute we wake up to the minute we go to sleep, there is always an opportunity to learn. Okay. That's my number one. Number two, if you are going to be home, it certainly does not hurt to have some items. And your big items would be like some kind of kitchen is always really good, not only for the kids to play with each other, but for you to play as well. Blocks, magnet tiles, art supplies from the dollar store. Also,
yes,
you
things that can get in on their level. Make sure you're getting in on their level. That's something I guess I kind of forgot to talk about. But make sure that in those items that you're getting in stock, make sure it's something that also you're going to get on their level and play with them.
Yes.
These are items that you need to be, because, you know, at this age, they don't do a lot of independent play.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to make it a learning opportunity, get in there and get on their level and do it with them.
Yes. So do not just give them the acrylic paint and say, enjoy.
Right. Right. They need some guidance, and we know that. But if you want to make it a learning opportunity, you really do have to get in there and be more intentional about it.
Another item that I would recommend that families buy is you could get them at butcher stores or even your local supermarket. I would strongly recommend getting a very large roll of white paper.
Yes.
And so it's very inexpensive. I believe you could even get it from a company called Uline. So Uline, it's like restaurant supplies and stuff like that. So I would get that. That's going to last you till the kids actually go to kindergarten. But you could use that as paper. You could use that as covering. So, of course, you want to, you know, not ruin everything. But also, you could take bits and pieces of that and bring it to the nursing home and, you know, display it on your front door. It doesn't just have to be the refrigerator. The whole neighborhood could, you know, get to enjoy the art of your kiddo.
Oh, yeah.
So have some items at home. The next tip is to start early. There is, if you get into the habit of playing with, you know, kind of an intention of learning, if they get used to that, you don't wake up one day and say, okay, guys, today we're starting preschool at home. Sit down and listen. Right? So from the womb, they're learning things, whether it's your facial cues, whether it's, you know, what their twin does, whether it's turn taking, whatever it is. If you start early, it not only becomes a habit for the twinnies, but it becomes a habit for you.
Yeah.
Okay. The next thing that I have is I really want to emphasize this whole chores as games business, because you can't tell me, like, unless you literally have like a live-in housekeeper and a live-in chef and your own personal driver, there is no parent on the planet that can't use an extra pair of hands. And considering that we just delivered two extra pairs of hands, the sooner we put those hands to work, the better it will work.
The better
for,
it's going to be.
Yeah. But not only for us, because I'm lazy, but really for the twinnies, because there's a lot of ways that you can make things fun. Even putting items like after dinner, as soon as the kids are able to understand, they could put the ketchup back in the refrigerator. You know, I'm not saying let them take the knives to the sink, but they're
definitely appropriate for their age.
And on our Twiniversity website, we actually have a list of chores that are sorted by age. So if your twins are two, we already compiled this list for you. So if you're like, I don't know, guys, we did the work for you. So we'll link you to that
too.
Yeah, that's really a good one. And the last thing that my big, big takeaway is you got to stay positive. And so positive reinforcement is going to take you significantly further than saying you did it wrong, right? Mm-hmm. So when you do have a kid that is kind of doing it wrong, Melissa, how do we get them back on the right path?
Well, like you said, you have to make it fun for them. You have to give them incentives to want to do it. You know, my son, like we were talking about throwing mm-hmm. the wooden blocks or throwing things and kind of making it a game, but maybe they go off track.
Yeah.
You have to say, okay, we can't play this game and it can't be fun if we're going to do it that way. Here are the rules of the game and mm-hmm. setting it up before you start playing. Say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Yes. And like I said before, get involved yourself. Because I've noticed with my son, if I say, go, here's a game that you and your sister are going to play right now. I need to go clean the kitchen. Mm-hmm. You guys are going to do this. Keep cleaning. And I'm like frustrated at them. And yeah. I'm over in the kitchen trying to do. No, that does not work. You have to be in there with them playing the game, modeling. This is how we share. This is how we take turns. This is how, you know, your sister gets a turn. And now it's your chance to mm-hmm. do it. And oh, look. And like you said, that positive reinforcement, just being very positive with them and not being so negative. And mm-hmm. it really will make your day go better, but it also just models for them how to get through life with yeah. a positive attitude. Because if you don't have that, you get to school and you don't do something right, or your teacher told you to do it this way and you did it the wrong way, you're in tears sobbing on the floor because you don't know
yeah.
what to do. And it's so hard for those kids who yeah. were never taught, hey, this is how you overcome something if you're struggling with something.
Yeah.
And so you really have to be positive and encourage them that you yeah. can do this. You are good at this. You are a good helper. Here, let me come alongside and help you with it. And be there with them instead of just being so negative and punitive about things.
Yeah.
That's not going to help.
If you find that you're having a problem doing that, then turn into somebody else. This is the only time where I'm going to tell you
yeah.
it's okay not to be yourself. So right? if you
fake
feel,
it.
yeah, fake it till you make it, right? And so yeah. I always use the analogy that being a parent of twins is the same as being a used car salesman. How do I get you to write this letter today? What do we have to do? Let's
what
do this.
What do I have to do to get you to this point? Right.
Let's do it. How do we do this? And there are going to be plenty of times. And if you're listening to this, you can't be like, Nat, that's impossible. Melissa, I can't do this. You don't have to be yourself. You could be Miss Libby from Happy Gilmore, right? I don't know if you any saw that. She's like right. the teacher that always comes to my mind. You could be your own preschool teacher that, you know, you
right.
that still holds a place in your heart.
Yeah, so, think of somebody who encouraged yeah. you and how did they make you feel and what did they do? And take for me, I have to take a step back. Okay, he's 2.5 or she's 2.5. Is it really that important? And just really thinking about your own attitude and where mm-hmm. you're at, or maybe if you had a negative experience in
yeah.
school, thinking about that and, yeah. okay, I want to make their experience positive. How can I change this and turn this around for this generation?
Yeah.
Because growing up, I had some negative teachers and then I had some really great ones. And you have to think back to that. Okay, I want to focus on the great ones. What did they do to make me feel so good about myself?
Mm-hmm.
What did they do to get me to do what they needed me to do to push me to get to where I needed to go? And those are the things you have to think about and just really look at yourself. And if you are very negative about it, maybe it is because of a negative experience that you had in school. And you kind of need to work through that so that you're not passing that negativity on to your kids. You don't want to do that.
Yeah. You have plenty of opportunities to teach them things. And if you're having a bad day, you know, because of whatever, there's 86 bazillion reasons why people have a bad day. But you don't have to do everything every day. You do what you can. You make each day count. You make each minute count when and
yeah.
if possible. There's always something. But Melissa, honestly, this has been such a very eye-opening discussion. And I do want to encourage everybody to visit Melissa's Instagram. It's Last Minute Pre-K, exactly the way that I just said it. So you could find her there. And the great thing is she's so generous to even do this podcast with us. But you could send her a direct message on her Instagram page, too, if you're like,
yes.
am I doing
sure.
this right? What should I do? And, of course, don't forget, too, the great websites that she just gave us, which is the teacherspaidteachers.com and the hands-onasweGrow.com. Did I do good, Melissa? Mm-hmm. I did good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Melissa.
Thank you. It's been so fun. Thank you so much.
Listen, I think this is going to be the first of many because right now it's home preschool. And so you may do home kindergarten. We have no idea where the wind's going to take you.
We'll see what happens.
We have no
idea. We'll see what happens.
Oh, but guys, thank you so, so much for listening. And if you are struggling at home with all of your twinny, let's say, awesomeness, don't forget that we have thousands upon thousands of articles on twiniversity.com that could help you through every step of the way. From the minute you find out that there's a second heartbeat through the college years, when, you know, one aces the other SAT and the other one doesn't. Like, literally, we run the gamut on Twiniversity. And if you are expecting and you're listening to this, please join us for an online Twiniversity class or in person in New York City, Chicago, and Houston. And guys, until next time, see you later, alligators. Thanks for listening.